Hi, this is Heather Esposito, and this is Leadership by Design. Welcome to today's episode of Leadership by Design. Today's guest is Lauren Zuli, who's a senior learning strategist and internal coach and part of our global leadership development team. Lauren possesses deep experience working at the intersection of conscious leadership, organizational development, and sustainability. She is passionate about helping people unlock their potential, reduce human struggles, and own their unique abilities. Lauren's compassionate yet challenging whole being approach facilitates inner and outer success for clients by cultivating awareness and aligning core values with meaningful action. As a professional certified coach, Lauren leverages evidence-based techniques rooted in cognitive behavioral coaching, psychological safety, and mindfulness to help leaders and teams manage change, culture, well-being, and performance. She's coached and consulted in private, public, and nonprofit sectors, serving many industries, including manufacturing, technology, management consulting, hospitality, education, and marketing. Lauren is a professional certified coach through the International Coaching Federation, as well as a psychological safety coach through the Academy of Brain-Based Leadership. Lauren also holds certifications in energy leadership through the Institute for Professional Excellence and is a mindfulness-based stress reduction teacher through the University of California, San Diego School of Medicine. Lauren obtained her Bachelor of Science in Applied Mathematics in Physics and Astronomy from the University of Pittsburgh and her Master's of Business Administration in Sustainability from Duquesne University. Lauren is an explorer of the outdoors, a dedicated yogini, and aspiring triathlete. Her typical weekend looks like lounging with a book at the beach, hiking mountain trails, and noshing on fish tacos. Welcome to today's podcast, Lauren.
Thank you, Heather. Pleasure to be here.
Oh, so I know that some of our listeners may not be aware that you've recently moved to the Global Leadership Development Team and may know you from another part of the organization. Can you just talk a little bit about some of your background, how you started where you did and ended up where you are today?
Yeah, absolutely. I will try to make it brief, but I think we all know that it never ends up being that way. And so this may resonate with you because I think last time you were on the podcast as a guest, you talked about the non-linear approach that you've had to joining the leadership development team. And similarly, I've kind of followed a path like that, not like yours, but my own, of course, but it's been very, very circuitous. So as you mentioned in my bio, you know, I started out my undergrad as an applied mathematics and physics and astronomy major. And really that was mainly based off of my passion for intersections and interconnectivity. And I took that degree and really didn't do much with it. Went out to Colorado, thought I was going to get a PhD in applied mathematics and got halfway through and was just like, you know, this isn't for me. I prefer to be bouldering in the mountains rather than being in the classroom studying one theorem that only two people in the world really care about. So I decided to hit pause on that and really go back to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, where I got my undergraduate degree, and kind of coached my way into deciding where else I was going to take my life. And that's when I started to realize how important the idea of interconnectivity and understanding ourselves and what we really want to do in the world was really that important. But ended up choosing a school in sustainability and specifically an MBA program. And that actually opened up my eyes towards the concept of systems thinking. And you know, that's something that I'm really passionate about. I'm passionate about bringing that concept into organizational development, leadership development. But at the time, I was exposed to it from a sustainability standpoint and didn't really give it too much thought in how much it impacted my life. But after that, made my way through several different states, Virginia, Chicago, all for work, but eventually ended up in Michigan working with Herman Miller on the sustainability team in product design. And over the years, I recognized while I had a passion for sustainability, it wasn't quite flexing everything that I felt really pulled towards. And it wasn't until I started to take a step back, look at some of my other passions, which were really in mindfulness and in personal development, and started to say, okay, what else is here for me to really understand? Like, what else is here asking me to kind of dig a little deeper? And that's when I did decide to say, okay, all right, there's this bigger, broader thing happening that's asking me to think about what is really important in my life, what is most essential here. And that practice came through studying mindfulness and meditation, asking myself, what are these common thoughts, common feelings that are showing up for me? And that practice really opened up my eyes towards what else is available. And so I dug deeper into mindfulness, which brought me into the coaching field, and decided to personally pursue a certification in coaching. And that then took me into another process of looking at neuroscience, specifically cognitive behavioral coaching to start. And I don't know, the rest is really history. But at the end of the day, I ended up moving part-time in my role at Herman Miller to build a business and focus on coaching individuals, teams, and organizations. And then several years later, I met you. I met you when you were in the sales team, and, you know, we started a rapport. I was really excited to learn that there was another coach within the organization that was actually coaching in the organization. And, you know, we stayed connected, and it just, I don't know, fate, it happened.
That's right. That's right.
Whatever you want to call it.
That's an exciting journey to kind of see how you've put all of those things together. And I probably should have mentioned in your bio, you're now leading our Conversational Coaching for Leaders program as we work to scale that throughout the organization. So I'm glad that you've been able to come full circle and bring that skill set inside Herman Miller and to help us scale that program. It's exciting to watch.
Thank you. Been exciting to be part of. So thank you very much.
Yeah, it has been fun. I know we were having a conversation the other day around leadership mind traps, and it was like, oh, wait, we need to put this on the podcast. We should be having this conversation live instead of talking about it just in terms of leadership development. So I was hoping we could spend a little time on that today. And I don't know, maybe we'll dig into some of these other backgrounds and interests that you have and see how they all intersect, since I know that's important to you. But can we start with mind traps? Is that okay with you?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So maybe we should start with a definition so that all of our listeners start off with a common understanding. So how would you define a leadership mind trap?
Yeah. So a mind trap, or another term you can use, is a thinking trap. But basically, it's a combination of a cognitive bias and an adaptive response that becomes common patterns of unhelpful thinking that keep us stuck, or they can exasperate painful emotions, or perhaps even pull us out of the present moment. Another way you can think about it is it's kind of like a tape recorder that plays in your head, and sometimes it feels like you have control over it, other times it feels like you don't, but often it's a really deconstructive way of showing up and inhibiting you from really being present and actively conscious about what it is that you're doing or how to move forward. And so sometimes they look like interpretations. Mind traps can also look like assumptions, limiting beliefs, unconscious fears. They manifest in lots of different ways and can be expressed into action. So it's almost important to really turn the flashlight of awareness onto these mind traps, how they come up, when they show up, and really what their impact is on you.
Yeah, so can you give us an example of what a mind trap might be? Because I know you and I talk about a lot of these things. Sometimes they're rooted in a lot of our approaches to leadership development, but this could be new information for some of our listeners. So what would be a practical example of that?
One example of a mind trap is what we would call catastrophizing. And the idea of catastrophizing is really overestimating the consequences of something negative will happen. And so a tangible example of this is if, say, your boss calls your cell phone and leaves a message and you're on your lunch break, and you immediately go into a thinking trap around, oh my gosh, I must have done something wrong. Did I get a project in on time? Did I send an email with a typo? it's a way that you take your thinking to the worst degree that you could possibly take, even though you have very little information or data telling you that that is the case.
So is that similar to or different than our tendency to have a negativity bias? Is it related to that?
Yeah, it absolutely is related to a negativity bias. And as we know from brain science, that our brain is wired 5 times more likely to look at a negative event or see something negative within our environment than it is to see something positive. And so while that is a form of a negativity bias, catastrophizing is a mind trap that you kind of go into and almost, again, write a script around it. And so it's that tendency to see the negative and not just see a negative, but really take it to the worst case possible, you know, overestimating the consequences of anything happening.
Yeah. So does that happen when I send you an email?
It does put me on alert, but I don't go to the degree of thinking that I've done something wrong.
Okay, good. Is that the only mind trap we can fall into, or are there some other ones?
Oh, no. There's quite a few, unfortunately, right? But as we know, since we have a brain, we are biased creatures. Another mind trap that perhaps a lot of us get stuck in and can often come up with leaders is black and white thinking. And so black and white thinking, often called all or nothing thinking, is really when you have polarity of thinking. There's really no room for gray. You kind of hone in on one thing or the next. And so one example of this could be if a difficult situation arises as a leader, say a strategy doesn't pan out, or perhaps you see a project that's going sideways, you only see the negative aspects and you are unable to see the opportunities or possibilities outside of the problem. And so this is where it can be really challenging, or let me give you another example. How about this one might resonate because it almost relates to like, there's a good or bad way of thinking about something. Like, I am always right in this scenario. So if you have a tendency to think that your way is the best way all the time, you basically close yourself off to seeing any other opportunities. And that in of itself is a black and white thinking trap. But we don't necessarily see it that way because we're so emotionally ingrained or entrenched in with our perspective that it can be really, really hard to even open up the blinders and look for the opportunities for another option or perspective to exist.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So what causes us to fall into these mind traps?
Yeah, it's a really great question. Well, you know, the one thing that you already brought up is that our brain is primitive, right? And it is wired to look for negativity in situations. But the other thing is that it's wired to be closed. It likes closed loops. So when we don't have information, we don't have data to provide us a full, complete story, we plug it. If there's a gap, our brain likes to plug it, and it'll plug it with whatever is available to us. That could be building a story. It could be an assumption that we're making, an interpretation. We will pull things from the past that made sense to us, and we'll plug it in the present moment. Or if we think something in the future is going to happen, we'll start thinking that it's probably happening right now, even though it's never even occurred and it might never occur. So it's really looking at the tendencies of the mind, which often go to judgment. It looks at clinging at things. It has really challenging, it's really challenged with letting go of scenarios and being able to just be fully present with the moment that that's unraveling in front of you.
So would you say that when we're under stress or when we are in environments where there may be greater amounts of uncertainty, that because of that tendency we have to fill in the gap of these loops, that those are when we can become more susceptible? Not that they're not present all the time, but do we become more susceptible in times like that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. When something is uncertain, when we feel like perhaps even our egos might be bruised a little bit.
That's a hard one.
I know we have some fragile egos, and often we want to shy away or pack it away and not really turn towards some of those shadowy sides of ourselves. But it's a form of protection, though. But yes, to answer your question, when we don't know, right, that causes our brain to be in a threat mode. And we know that from psychological safety, that security is one of the domains of the brain, that we all have some sensitivity to it, but not all of us have the same level of sensitivity to it.
And so as we've kind of talked about these, you know, the impression that I'm getting is that these mind traps are negative and they're things we want to avoid. Are there any benefits to the fact that these mind traps have the tendency to exist?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, they don't just come out of thin air, right? They're certainly anchored to something. And sometimes that anchoring point is, again, a perspective or a belief system that we have about ourselves. They can show up in a way to protect us in who we think we are. And so that in of itself can be really helpful data for us. Data that helps us understand, like, how do we actually see ourselves or see the world? And when we can ask some of those questions, like, what is this meaning that's coming up for me as I continue to see this pattern of thinking? It enables us to really redefine, or it invites us in to redefine our relationship to self, both with our mind and how we're emotionally feeling, and how we can redefine ourselves in relationship with others. So there is definitely a benefit to noticing the thinking traps and being able to identify how constructive they are, and perhaps maybe how deconstructive they are. Are they helping us or are they hurting us? And in what circumstances are they really helping us, and how might they be impacting us, and what are they really costing us?
So I'm kind of hearing two different kinds of awareness. There's the awareness of, hey, I'm in one. What do I want to do about that? And where's that coming from? And how can I act differently? But then the part that scares me personally is, I guess part of a thinking trap is the lack of awareness that I'm even in one, and I'm operating as if I'm not, that I have no awareness. I don't know what I don't know.
Right. Yeah. No, that's a really good assessment of both possibilities. Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about the scarier one first. Like, how do you become aware of them if you don't know you're in one, or you have them? That scares me.
Really? Really great question. And this is near and dear to my heart, as a mindfulness-based stress reduction practitioner. A lot of what we do is help others create a sense of awareness of what's really going on within their body and in their mind. And in order to create a sense of awareness of what's going on, it's really calling you in to pause and be fully present with yourself. And that is really asking people to be vulnerable. We don't like to pause, right? We're just not creatures of that type of practice. I mean, look around. I mean, the world is telling us to go, 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 perform, be here, do that, not to just be. And so the practice of mindfulness is really about paying attention in the present moment, non-judgmentally. And that's really how we can cultivate a sense of awareness around the patterns of our mind. And it can be done both informally and formally. I think most people are probably more aware or have been exposed to formal meditation of sitting down, eyes closed, you know, maybe you're on a bench or a seat or yoga mat. And that is a great practice. Don't get me wrong. It's one of my personal practices, is to sit in silence and, you know, pay attention to breath. But you can also pay attention to the mind and notice what thoughts come up. Do you attach to those? Do you follow the story? Or are you able to stay present and just notice the thoughts as if they're clouds in the sky just passing through? Because essentially, that's what thoughts are. They're very impermanent. And so if we give ourselves the opportunity just to tune in a little bit for a brief period of time, we could start to see the impermanence of the thoughts. And even furthermore, impermanence of our feelings and emotions as well.
I think you're right that most people hear mindfulness and they think of, you know, the mindfulness videos you can see on YouTube or the apps that exist. And most of those are around breathing, paying attention to specific parts of your body. And I would say they're probably, like, to me, more meditation. So if I'm not a fan of that practice, how else can I develop what you were just talking about with being mindful of my thoughts if I've never been exposed to something like that before? I don't know how. How would you advise a leader to start becoming aware of their thoughts and how they're affecting them?
A simple pause is really helpful in any conversation, or noticing like a tendency, like right now, as you were talking, I noticed that I was getting ready to talk, right? Mm. Waiting for you to end your sentence so that I can then respond to it. But I didn't necessarily know what thought I had, but I noticed that urge to do that. And so sometimes it's easier to even connect to the body first before we even get to the thought. Notice any urges in the body. It could be a tension in the body that comes up. It could be a jaw that's clenched. So sometimes, I guess what I'm trying to say is really look for the expression of a thought, and then you can even backpedal into what's the core thought. Or another way to think about it is an action. Even ask yourself, like, what is the purpose or what is the thought behind me deciding that I want to run today versus bike? Like, what was the thinking that was going on behind that to help me understand what generated the motivation to get to that action?
The one you just mentioned about, like, already ready to speak, I think that's something that we all encounter 1,000 times a day. Somebody's talking and a thought comes up for us, or something we want to contribute or share, and we get so attached to what we're chomping at the bit to share that we miss what was being said, because now we're in our own head. We're not listening to the conversation, or we're already defending our point of view and how we're going to combat what you're saying. Is that similar to what you're talking about?
It is. So it's connected for sure. And when you notice yourself that you kind of have this urge towards responding, or you're even in your head, you're not even paying attention to what somebody is saying, but you're trying to formulate your thoughts. Like, that in of itself that's an example of not being fully present and paying attention. But if you're able to catch yourself doing that, like, oh, I was just really in my head thinking about my response to what Heather is saying, that's a form of mindfulness. It's paying attention present moment. And even noticing that is a form. But yes, to answer your question, all of these things are certainly related.
Yeah, one of the ways that I've just helped myself over the years, and it's something we teach as part of our coaching program, is the way we listen and speak. And so my job as a recipient of what someone is telling me, my job is first and foremost not to respond to it, but it's to make sure that whatever you're trying to communicate, that I'm sharing that back with you. So I'm trying to listen in a way, and I guess, like, this is the mindfulness piece. The question I'm asking myself is, what is Lauren trying to communicate to me? And how would I say that in my own words? And then I want to give that back to you so that you have a chance to say, yes, that's exactly what I was trying to communicate, or to correct me and say, no, it wasn't. That wasn't what I was trying to communicate, or that wasn't the perception I wanted you to have.
Yeah, absolutely. That is a form of mindful communication. That is keeping mindfulness in interpersonal communication, essentially.
What about, we've talked about a couple, you've talked about catastrophizing, you've talked about black and white thinking. Are there others of these thinking traps that you find are really common, especially working with leaders?
Yeah, that's a really great question. Well, I think one that comes up a lot is the idea of personalizing, or I would say internalizing and personalizing. And this is almost like overestimating your amount of influence on something, when in actuality, there's a lot of other people involved in the scenario. You have your team, you have your leaders that you're managing up, you're managing below. And so I find leaders who tend to be down in the dance floor, when really they should be up in the balcony, tend to get caught up in this personalization or internalizing and taking on more responsibility than they need to with projects.
Yeah, I've seen that happen. I've seen it happen with others. I've seen it happen with myself. And I think some of it goes back to what you were talking about, that self-protection piece. If I start to worry about whether something's going to get done or whether the resources exist, it's really easy to like want to jump in service, but I know that it doesn't always, like in my mind, it's in service, but it doesn't always have that impact for others, because it can look like I might not trust them, or it may appear that I don't think they're capable, when it's really more of wanting to ensure we can move it across the finish line.
Right, exactly. So personalizing in mindfulness traps often can manifest in lots of different ways, and they can have a lot of different drivers. It could be a fix-it brain that's jumping in, kind of forcing you to say,
I don't know anybody with a fix-it brain.
Nope. Exactly. Right. And then that manifests in a way where you're like, oh, I got to put myself at the center of this. I have to be the person who fixes this. Then to your point, it can then have an unwanted consequence of looking like you don't trust somebody, or perhaps somebody's incapable, or you are concerned that, you know, the project won't actually get over the finish line. And so that all of that can be considered a personalization thinking trap.
Yeah, that fix it brain, that's the one that I see most universally, you know, as we've run these coaching programs for a long time. And coaching is a very different approach to problem solving. It's really asking questions to help somebody else find their way through, versus someone who's seeking advice and they want you to solve it for them. So more of a consulting approach. Okay. And I think for leaders, because for the most part, they were successful in that role before they became a leader. They were a very high-performing, successful individual contributor. That's why they got promoted into leadership. So not only do they have the expertise, the wherewithal, the know-how, and like, I know this might sound, you were talking about fragile egos, but it feels good to fix it. It feels good to come in and save the day. So it's so easy to fall into that and to step back and say, I'm going to ask questions to help somebody else figure that out for themselves and take myself out of it. That is so hard sometimes. And it's the thing that the transition I see the most difficult as leaders are moving from the skill of telling or consulting to the skill of asking questions and coaching. So hard.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Especially for a newer or emerging leader.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's one of the things that I've noticed when I coach a very brand new leader is how, and I actually ask them this question, and it's not a negative, but how are you going to get your ego fed in this new role? You know, the way we rewarded ourselves in the old role was through high performance, getting the thing done, whatever the thing is for your function. And that can't be the same way you get the reward in a leadership role. And that is really a difficult transition to make in the beginning, because we do need that positive reinforcement and acknowledgement that we're doing good work, and good work looks different at that new level of leadership.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So can you share with us an example of a leader that you've worked with and what this journey looked like for them?
Absolutely. One leader that I was working with had a goal to improve his skill of influencing and motivating his team. As we started to look at the drivers behind this goal, we uncovered that he had a belief that his team was not really engaged with their own strategy. And as we know, beliefs have a really powerful way of influencing how we feel and ultimately how we show up in our work or in our lives. So we looked at how this belief was influencing how he was showing up as a leader. What we discovered is that he was deep in the trenches with his team, taking on a lot of responsibility to move things over the finish line. And so there was very little delegation. And when he did delegate, he felt like he was orchestrating everything. So kind of using that metaphor that I used before of being on the dance floor versus the balcony, he was literally on the dance floor breakdancing, making all the moves, dazzling the crowd. So we really wanted to make sure that we got him back up to that balcony. So we looked at some of the hidden costs of his thinking and how he was behaving. And really what we identified is that he might be pushing his team. This is potential. He might be pushing his team away and sending the message that he didn't think that they were capable of executing on the work because he was taking so much of the work on. So when we started to challenge his thinking and his assumptions and his beliefs, that's when we got into some really good work. And what he realized is that, you know, he really was not empowering his people to take on the work. He recognized that his behavior alone was really driving a lot of the issues that were showing up for him. And ultimately, when you start to uncover and peel the layers away like an onion, it came back down to that assumption that his own team was not engaged in the work. And so that's a form of kind of black and white thinking of, well, because of this thinking, I have to jump to an assumption that they must not be ready to take on work. So at the end of the day, what we ended up doing is really getting him some great skills around coaching, much of what we talk about in the Coaching for Leaders program, being able to motivate and influence using open-ended questions and giving his team an opportunity to really express themselves and own their own role.
Awesome. So yeah, it kind of reminds me a little bit of what we were talking about on the last episode of the podcast about, I don't know if it was necessarily what you would call a thinking trap or a mind trap, but just some of, as I've been working on my own development, some of the awareness that I've had to like what's been getting in the way of that. And I don't know if I can put it into one of your buckets, but it definitely were things that like when I worked with a coach to get underneath them, like, oh my gosh, I didn't even realize. I call it what was running in the background. That's how I refer to it. But what was running in the background that was in a way sabotaging the very change I was trying to create.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. It's hard to pull that forward if we haven't been able to expose it yet.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I was completely unaware to it until we kind of worked through an exercise. It was a little shocking, a little eye-opening. And then as I thought about it, I said, if I heard anybody else say what I just voiced, I'd probably want, you know, we're like, want to hit them upside the head and say, how could you be thinking that? And yet here it is in my very own head, like somewhere deep down, I was thinking that, or the tape was playing because of an experience I had had at some point where, you know, maybe in that one instance that was true, but I was holding on to it like it was true for everything, you know, subconsciously, and wasn't even aware about it.
Yeah. Those assumptions can be really, really powerful. And often, like you said, unconscious to us that we are pulling something forward from the past, thinking that it's true here for the present.
Yeah, dang, that is a trap right there. That is a big trap right there. I don't know which bucket it fits into, but it's a huge trap. Mm-hmm. Lauren, so if we have some leaders listening who are saying, what are some things that I can start doing today that would help me either become more aware or even better to do something with these mind traps that I'm starting to notice, what advice would you have for them?
Great question. I would actually break that up into two separate responses. One, I would love to give some strategies around what you can do in the moment when you start to notice some of this thinking coming up, and then also provide some proactive strategies too to get ahead of thinking traps.
Great.
But in the moment, it can be, okay, yeah. So in the moment, it can be really challenging to notice some of these unconscious thoughts, or perhaps they are conscious for you. But if you can take a moment to kind of pause and notice what your thinking patterns are, the first step that you want to do is really identify what's coming up for you. So can you identify whether you're catastrophizing in the moment, or perhaps moving into that black and white thinking? Or you might even notice that you're internalizing and personalizing a situation, or even leaning into some of the emotional reasoning traps, which we didn't really talk much about, but that's you really base your decisions and actions solely on how something feels. But once you can identify the trap, then you can actually start to get some distance from it. And some of the most simple ways to do that are asking yourself some questions. And these are four questions that I ask myself, and they really can lead to some powerful distance and a little bit more clarity. And so the first one is, what is the utility of this thought? A lot of the time we don't really get to down to the nitty gritty to understand how we're actually going to use this thought. Is it serving us, or is it not serving us? The second question is, how might I be wrong? You know, confirmation bias is a tricky thing. And so we often don't want to think about how our thinking could be wrong. And so just—
I don't like that one. I don't like that one.
Most people don't. But that's a really powerful one as well. The third question is to ask, what's another way of looking at this situation? Right? And that just allows you to really widen the blinders that you might have on what you're looking at. And lastly, what evidence do I have to support this thought? And that's where you think that you really have a factual, sound perspective, when perhaps you don't. And so there may not be data, there might not be the information that you need that's really driving you towards making an assumption. So really asking, what evidence is here?
Those are four.
I was just going to say, it's really just about creating more flexibility and agility in your mind.
Yeah, I love those four questions. And it reminds me, pieces of that remind me of Adam Grant's book, Think Again. A couple of those questions are things that he recommends so that you can rethink something. And specifically, the how could I be wrong? That's the first place I saw that question. And then what are other ways of looking at this same thing that would explain it? And so it causes you to bring in multiple perspectives.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The interesting thing is, you know, a little bit about brain science is that we don't realize that you can't break a neural pathway, and a neural pathway in your brain is like a highway porting information. And so we always kind of construct, we continue to run that same path and same way of thinking. And so the only way around that, since we can't break that neural pathway, is to create a new one. And so we have to really recreate and think again in order for us to change a new perspective.
Yeah, that's powerful. Thank you for sharing.
Absolutely. I do want to briefly touch on proactive strategies because, like I said, you almost have to tackle it on both ends, right? It's really great to get it in the moment, but you can also start to do this in your daily life as well. And, you know, I, of course, am very biased about it, but really leaning into the practice of mindfulness. And this is really just about objectively noticing and identifying patterns of thinking. And my guess is that you'll start to notice some themes. You'll notice that perhaps a thought is coming up frequently for you. And there could be the same type of triggers for that thought. And perhaps you'll notice that there's maybe themes around how it's impacting you, your emotional state, and then ultimately your behavior. So the more that you can actually start to notice just patterns of thinking in your daily life or at work, the more that you're going to be able to leverage that skill in some high stakes situations, right? It's like why firefighters can go into a burning house and they're on autopilot, is because they train and they train and they do it outside of it. And that's really what mindfulness does. So if you can just a couple minutes a day, just paying attention, noticing the thoughts from an objective perspective, trying not to attach it. Just like fish, right? Like you're snorkeling, watch the fish go by, clouds in the sky.
Great, thanks.
Yeah, absolutely.
One of the questions that we usually ask our guests, you know, is like, and it may be a trap or it could be something completely different, is what are you working on in your own leadership development right now?
Love that question. For myself, it's kind of a combination of things. I'm personally working on the idea of inspiring a shared purpose and a shared vision. That is, I would say, not something that I struggle with personally, but I collectively, in terms of like a new team and being able to communicate effectively and instill a sense of clear vision or a clear action item towards a vision when you know that our team is quite new. Mm-hmm. And so I think consistently keeping that, like, okay, what is it that we are doing and how do we get there effectively in today's day? And we've had a lot of changes to our team in just, you know, the 6 months that we've been together. And so, you know, some of my work has changed in the 6 months. And so being able to keep that shared purpose, that shared vision together, and then also see how that can manifest in today's projects, in today's work, even though it might be a long-term vision and a long-term goal that we might not see for 2 years or 3 years.
Right. So when you think about wanting to get better at that, and you think about what's between where you are and where you want to be, do you see that connected to a mind trap for yourself, or is it just something, is it not related to a mind trap that gets in the way?
Yeah, I think that there's a bit of a mind trap here around almost like future telling. And I didn't really talk about this earlier, but another mind trap is future telling. And this is the idea that you can see the future. So you put a lot more bias or emphasis and confirmation on what should happen or what will happen in the future, rather than kind of like what's the current state today. And so I do tend to be, as a big picture thinker, somebody that gets really excited and really passionate about a vision. And sometimes I can get so latched onto that, like my clinging mind is like, oh, this is going to be so great, or this is the way it needs to look or needs to be. And I can see it happening because of X, Y, and Z. When in actuality, you know, right here in the moment, perhaps is showing and exposing something a little bit different that we need to pay attention to.
Yeah. One of a leader I admire once said that, who is also like that, said that they can fall into magical thinking is how they describe that. You know, what was coming up for me as you were talking about that is I've done Strengths Finder, and one of my strengths is, I think they call it futuristic. So I am really, really good at that vision. I usually can see further past the horizon than others. I can see it in its full glory. So what's the balance between that as a strength and this trap of potentially, you called it future teller?
Yeah, future teller, thinking that you know how, what will unfold in the future, as if it's already happened, or it's like a big capital T truth.
That's how it feels in my brain. That's how, like, it's already done. Yeah, but I could see right. that. I could see that, how that could be a mind trap. Because then you could be closed off trap. To other possibilities.
Exactly. Stole the words right from my mouth. And that is a tendency of our mind. And there are attitudes of the mind, or attitudes of mindfulness, that we talk about as well. And that is the clinging mind. Like feeling as if that it has to look this way, or it needs to look this way. And yep, then that closes off possibilities and ends up then even getting into a black and white thinking of here and the now about your decision making. So one mind track can often lead to another one. And that's where that compounding effect happens, and you can get into really sticky situations.
Yeah, I can see that. I definitely can see that. I tried. I, like, I guess I try to be more attached to like the vision and the outcome versus the how we're going to get there. Like the how we could get there could look a lot of different ways. And I might get closer and decide that, like, okay, maybe this isn't the right vision, but I don't know. That's how I usually think about it in my brain, because I don't know the best way to get there, but I'm pretty sure about where the destination should be.
Yeah. And I really appreciate that approach. And I think that can be incredibly supportive to make sure that you're opening up the blinders on a black and white thinking. Mm-hmm. But to go back to striking that balance between how do you know when you're in that future state and you really want to be a visionary and you're not sure whether you're latching onto something. One technique that I think it can be really helpful, and this is, we're dancing into moving into emotions here. So I'm just going to give some security to our listeners right now. It might be a little vulnerable, but you know, I like to use this metaphor that we really don't want a cell phone. Like the vision for me is not to own a cell phone, but the vision is for me to feel connected. Mm-hmm. The vision is for me to have access to information. Mm-hmm. The vision is for me to be able to be versatile and agile and flexible. And that is what's important. So it's really the thing that we want. It's the feeling and the emotion that we want when we get there. And that has been a really good gut check in how much we might be kind of attaching our vision to something. Is like, ooh, well, how attached are we to those emotions? Because emotions are powerful.
Yeah, they are.
And they can, you know, help us get to where we want to go. And much like mind traps, also like hold us back. So even connecting to the power behind the emotion of the vision can be a way in which to kind of check how we're attached to it.
It's a nice reminder to leave us with. If somebody wanted to learn more about thinking traps or mind traps, where would you refer them to? Where could they go do further learning?
Yeah, that's a really great question. One book that has been really powerful is it's called Unlocking Leadership Mind Traps, How to Thrive in Complexity. And Jennifer Garvey Berger wrote the book. It is pretty much she takes mind traps, thinking traps, and really distills them down into some simplistic forms and how they actually show up in organizations, and specifically leaders within organizations. And she does that through storytelling and scenarios. And so I would absolutely recommend reading it. It's a quick read. I forget how many pages it's, you know, less than 200 pages. You can get through it in a couple of days, but it's really powerful. Low effort to read, high impact. I'm going to guarantee right now that when you read through it, you're going to be like, oh, that's me. Or, oh,
yep, I've done that. Yeah.
I know I do that, or shown up in X, Y, and Z scenarios, but really, really operational, tactical ways to get ahead of these mind traps and even test them out, how to test your thinking.
Yeah, I definitely will second that book. Super easy read. It is very much written from a lay perspective. It's not heavily laden in theory. And I love the scenarios and the storytelling of the environments and the conditions that we've all found ourselves in at one time or another. So it very, very good start pointing. So before we wrap up, I'd love to ask you about our leadership principles and practices. You're part of our global leadership development team. So what's your favorite one? What is your favorite leadership principle or practice?
Unlocking potential, for sure, from a principal standpoint, and coaching to possibility. I mean, I don't know, I probably wear that on my sleeve, but it is just something that's near and dear to my heart. And I think that we all have so many unique gifts and inner wisdom that we hold so close to our chest, and we haven't been able to really excavate fully. And as a leader, if you are able to do that for others, it is powerful. It is absolutely powerful.
Yeah, that's why I'm so excited you're leading the Conversational Coaching for Leaders program, because I know how near and dear that is to your heart. And we just need more. We need our leaders to learn more about that. We haven't been able to scale it before. And so to be able to bring all of that knowledge and equip leaders to learn how to do it in some really brain-friendly ways is an exciting movement that we're on as we work to create a coaching culture. And what's the one principle or practice that presents the greatest growth opportunity for you?
I would probably say stretch over a status quo at the moment.
Okay.
And I think there's a lot for me here, but that I'm working through personally. But I've noticed just over the years, you know, as you make a pivot within your career, the way that I've done, you kind of second guess yourself a little bit. You know, I've been doing what I was doing for over a decade, and then you make what seemingly looks like a hard pivot, and then all of a sudden some imposter syndrome shows up, and it can pull you out of the game. And what we know from imposter syndrome, you know, one, I would say, symptom is when you aren't able to take responsibility for your successes. And sometimes I find myself in that trap, and then I start to play small. Mm. And then when you play small, you don't necessarily stretch yourself. So I'm somebody who deeply, deeply is, I love growth. I love development. And clearly that's what I do. And all of my work composition is focused around that. But for myself, you know, I'm still working on like, what does stretch look like for me? You know, because it's, even though this might be a newer path for me within Herman Miller, that is, I have a lot of years under my belt and doing it outside of it. So what am I afraid of?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. No, it gets back to those mind traps. I mean, it's like, what am I afraid of? And then you start to unpack that and it's like, oh, that's what I'm afraid of. Okay, going to work on that now.
But that's exactly it. I mean, the principles and practices are fantastic, but underneath them all, like what is inhibiting us from being able to fully operationalize that? Guarantee there's probably a mind trap or something that is going on from a mental paradigm that perhaps needs to shift in order for you to mobilize against those.
And one of the most powerful ways to get underneath those is coaching. I mean, we know that coaches are great at asking awareness and thought provoking questions that can really get you into that reflective space. I think coaching, just the act of the session, creates the pause that you were talking about at the beginning. And then, you know, a really great coach can really help you get new insights through the ways that they ask questions. And that's how you get underneath them. All right. Rapid fire questions. You ready?
Oh boy.
Oh boy.
Let's do it.
Okay, the first one's easy. It's a fill in the blank. Leadership is?
An inside job.
Oh, gosh. You mean I can't just skill my way to success as a leader?
Sorry. Darn it. Nope.
Darn it. What or who is a leader you admire and why?
I mean, Brené Brown. I have to say Brené. She is somebody that I just look to and I'm like, you are vulnerability and courage all wrapped up in one, right? I mean, that's essentially what she does. As a shame researcher, she really gets below the surface and gets to the heart of like what makes us all amazing, juicy humans. But I think I respect her approach to psychology, everything that she does. Her approach to research is really not to write these academic papers and to be published in a way that people can't really do anything with it.
Right, right.
She really wants to make it actionable. She wants to humanize these often really uncomfortable topics about sharing in the human experience. And she does that in a way that really that calls you in and de-armors you. And you kind of become this pile of mush when you read and listen to her. But also a pile of mush that feels so cradled and supported. And I feel like her ability to both like cut to the heart of the human spirit and human emotions and also influence, inspire a vision, I mean, that's unstoppable. Those are leadership qualities that you can't skill, you can't buy, you can't train. And I'm always just really in awe reading her work.
Yeah, she's a master storyteller too. Oh, nobody tells a better story than Brené. What are you currently?
The Southern accent. Oh, well, I think it's the Southern accent.
There you go. Yeah, she's kind of no nonsense too. So she's like got this like really kind of like hard no nonsense piece about her, and then this extremely like soft vulnerable side. So right. What does she call it? Exactly. Soft, strong back, soft belly, or
soft heart? Yeah, soft front.
Soft front. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what are you currently reading right now?
Oh, goodness. So I'm rereading two books. I'm in the process of rereading Ken Wilber's Theory of Everything, which is all about integral theory, understanding the difference between, or I would say not the difference, the interconnection of our internal and our expressive selves, and then also individual and collective selves. It's really powerful work. And I'm also rereading Robert Fritz, The Path of Least Resistance, which is really about organizational development, harnessing the creative force in organizational development through moving from an oscillation to more of an adaptive environment. And I'm now just about to start The Seven Practices of a Mindful Reader by Mark Lesser. And Mark Lesser co-founded the Search Inside Yourself program that used to be part of Google. Then they branched off and then they were a nonprofit. And now they just launched this past week that they're going to be a benefit corporation. So I'm really excited to see what work they've got going on. But so I'm always in between several different books. Most of the time it's a new book and something I've read in the past.
Yeah, you sound as bad as me in terms of how many books I'm trying to manage at any given time. And you talked a little bit about this earlier, but I'll give you one chance just to wrap us up with this one. But what do you love about your work?
Oh my goodness. It's really, really hard to, you know, keep it short, but I really enjoy reducing human struggles and helping people grow and develop in a way that is right for them. Like, how do you do it in an authentic inside out approach so that you really can not only redefine relationship to self, but how do you do that in a way to call people in and hope to develop the collective at the same time?
That's awesome. Well, I'm so glad you got to join us today. And I'm so glad that our leaders have had a chance to get to know you a little bit better since you are part of the leadership development team. Some of them may see you through the coaching program, but we are so blessed to be able to have you, your expertise and your knowledge as part of this work. And I'm excited to see what we're able to continue to do. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for asking me. This was a lot of fun and I'm honored to be part of the Global Leadership Development Team.
Awesome. So as we wrap up, remember, everyone deserves to have a great leader. So keep working at being the best leader you can be. Until next time. This podcast is an original production of Global Talent Management at Herman Miller Group. It's hosted by me, Heather Esposito, and produced in music by Sean Beck.